So you throw something straight up, comes down. When it's right at the top, what's the case? Velocity and acceleration are zero, velocity is non-zero. What do you say? Throwing something up at the top, what's the case? So it's kind of a fight between the A's and the C's, mostly. So I hope it's clear that when it reaches the top, it's gone from going up to going down. So at that instant, its velocity is zero. So A and C have that characteristic, the velocity is zero. What's the acceleration at that instant? So if you think about how the velocity is changing, it starts going up. When it reaches the top, the speed is zero, and beyond that, the speed is negative. And the slope of that curve is the acceleration. It's the same every place. So the acceleration is always 9.8 meters per second down. So how about you throw it to a friend? C. Acceleration is non-zero and the velocity is zero. So majority D, and that's the case. So the velocity isn't zero because it's still going to be moving sideways when it's at the top. The Y velocity will be zero, but it'll still have plenty of X velocity. So the velocity won't be zero at the top. So here we have this kind of roller coaster type thing, and we're interested in what the acceleration is under lots of different circumstances. So, and the answer is which direction is the acceleration in, A, B, C, or D? So how about for number one, what direction is the acceleration in? Oh, I've convinced lots of people wrong stuff. So I see some D's, and I think that's probably because I've just been telling you that gravity is always down, but this is being supported, right? It's going to be going sideways. So if you have straight line motion, the velocity and the acceleration have to be more or less in the same direction. So for one, it's C. How about for number three, which way is the acceleration? I still have some people I'm fooling. So if it's not being supported, then the only acceleration is going to be that due to gravity. It's undergoing free fall. So in three and in four, it's D. The acceleration is straight down. How about in number two? Which way is the acceleration? I see lots of right answers. So I feel sorry for the people who have D. Because I keep telling you the acceleration is always down, so it seems like that should be the right answer. It seems like that should be the answer to all of these, right? But it's the answer for three and four, because those are the only cases where the only force that's operating on it is gravity. So in number two, we have something that's moving like in a circle. Do you remember what direction we said the acceleration was for something in a circle? So remember, acceleration is the change in the velocity. So we have that sort of situation. And if we put those vectors tail to tail, the acceleration is actually up for number two, A. Well, so why did the bowling ball keep rolling?
Momentum.
So there was, I forget the name of the actor who was Hawkeye in MASH. They ran a contest. When he was in grade school, he asked what fire was, and the teacher said oxidation. And even as an old grown-up guy, he wasn't happy with that answer because it's just a word, right? It doesn't really tell you anything. So I claim that that's the problem with those explanations, that they're just words. And in particular, in this course, I would be perfectly happy if you would delete the word inertia from your vocabulary. It has nothing to do with physics. It's an old-fashioned word. So if you go back to the ancient Greeks, they might like that word, but we've grown up in a few millennia. That's what Newton said. That's Newton's first law. It says if there's no force, the consequence is a constant velocity. Let me go back to the fire story. So incidentally, if you're interested in what fire is, there is a real nice online video that won the contest to explain what fire was, which whatever his name is, Hawkeye was approving of. And me too, I thought it was a good video. So no force means constant velocity. And one of the things that's surprising about Newton's first law is that you never see something that's moving at a constant velocity. Things always slow down, right? So this ball, it went a long way, but it did come to a stop eventually. So it's really hard to make this situation of having no force. Very commonly, there are forces that are not particularly obvious. Now, about the best we can do in this classroom is this thing, which is called an air track. So this is kind of the opposite of a vacuum cleaner. It's going to push air through zillions of little holes in this piece of aluminum. And as a result, this thing will float on a cushion of air. So when metal is on metal, there's a lot of friction. But when this thing is floating, the frictional force won't be eliminated, but it'll be way smaller. And you'll see this thing pretty much doesn't slow down, right? Pretty much goes in a straight line at a constant speed until it has its bounce. Okay, so Newton's first law, in the absence of forces, things move forever in a straight line. But it's pretty rare that there are no forces acting on something. So Newton's second law says, what happens if there are forces? If there are forces, then he claims that if you take the net force and you divide it by the mass, you'll get the acceleration. And this also kind of doesn't match up very well with experience. So this equation says that no matter how small the force is, there's going to be some acceleration. And if you've ever pushed a car in the snow, you know that it sure seems like you can push hard and not go anyplace. Right? So I can apply a pretty big force to this brick, and I'm not getting any acceleration. And that's because the net force is zero, because there's a frictional force that's operating again. So once again, there's a hidden force that we're not seeing. But I claim that even if we have a very small force, there will be a corresponding acceleration. And I picked out about the smallest mass I could find to provide the smallest possible force, so I can see if that very small, what that very small force does in the almost absence of the frictional force. Maybe I'll just take that out. Let's see. So I think you can see that even next to no force caused this thing to go faster and faster and faster. It caused an acceleration that was present. What do I mean by net force? Well, forces are things that have pushes or pulls, so they automatically have direction. And so when we're talking about the net force, we're actually talking about vector addition. So if I have a force that's going this way and a force that's going that way, it's exactly equivalent to the vector sum of those two, which would be a force that is kind of going that way. So that's why all of the vector stuff was in this chapter, in the previous chapter, so we could apply that to adding up forces. So Newton's third law, it's often abbreviated action-reaction, which I hate. What the long form of it says is that if we have two objects, if object A somehow or other, through any magical means, some magical psychological force, if object A puts a force on object B, then I'm guaranteed that object B will put an equal and opposite force on object A. Things always come in action-reaction pairs. So the kind of the usual example of this, which I'm not particularly fond of, is a rocket. So what's happening in a rocket is the rocket is putting a big force on the exhaust, and therefore it's guaranteed that the exhaust is going to put an equal and opposite force on the rocket. Now, what's kind of funny is that almost all of this course, we're going to be concentrating on number two. But number two turns out not to be exactly correct. So Einstein has corrections to Newtonian mechanics, and they don't follow that the acceleration is the force divided by the mass. What is true, always, we haven't found any exceptions, so we found zillions of new forces since Newton was around, but they all satisfy this action-reaction principle. That if object A puts a force on object B will put an equal and opposite force on object A. Okay? So this means that if I slug you, you have nothing to complain about, right? The force that I put on your nose was exactly the same force that your nose put on my fist. So it's all exactly fair. So you can also see the most impressive demonstration that you're going to see this semester. I'm going to move the Earth all by myself. Did you see it?
Yeah.
So, you know that the Earth was pulling on me, and that means for sure that I'm pulling on the Earth. So the Earth undergoes an acceleration, that is that force divided by the mass of the Earth. And I undergo an acceleration that is the force divided by my mass. So this is the one occasion I can say that, relatively speaking, I'm light. compared to the Earth. So therefore I seem to have a much bigger sort of acceleration than the Earth does. Right? So when the semi-truck hits the bridge doesn't go very far because it weighs a lot. When the semi-truck hits the baby goes pretty far. It's true. Don't want to do that experiment at home. Okay, so what's the net force on this guy? Boy, it's quiet in here.
Zero.
Zero, right? Because it's not accelerating. We know that there's an obvious force on this, the weight of it. And that means there has to be an equal and opposite force that's occurring. And that's the table pushing up on it. Right? So we have the weight of this object pushing it down, and we have what we call the normal force pushing it up. So one of the things we're going to be doing in this course is having a list of forces and the corresponding formulas that apply to those forces. So the force of gravity, and by that I mean the same thing as the weight, the formula for that force is mg. And we're going to have a whole series of forces, not all of them today. So for example, a spring, it provides a force that is minus some constant times the extension. And we're going to be spending a lot of time talking about things like springs and strings and friction and the normal force. So the word normal doesn't mean standard, it means perpendicular. What's special about this force that the table has on this brick is that it's perpendicular to the surface. There's also a force between the table and this brick that is now horizontal, that's fighting this force that I'm applying with this ruler. Right? So under these circumstances, I was pushing it this way. There must be some force from the table that's pushing it that way. We call that force friction. So friction is horizontal to the surface, and the normal force is normal, which is to say perpendicular to the surface. And in that circumstance, everything added up to zero. The frictional force was exactly equal to the force that I was applying from the side. Now, equal and opposite forces, it sounds a whole lot like number three, but it's not number three, right? So forces can be equal, but I've just said that the reaction force of the weight of this object is the force of gravity of the Earth, the source of that force on that brick. The table is pushing the brick up, and that means that the brick has to be pushing the table down equally and oppositely. The table is pushing the brick this way, that means that the brick is pushing the table that way. So the action-reaction pairs have to be the same type of force. A gravitational force of the brick, of the Earth on the brick, has to be equal to the gravitational force of the brick on the Earth, not some frictional force or some normal force.
Could the frictional force be on either side?
Yeah, so friction is kind of an interesting force, right? No matter, it's smart. What's the frictional force on this thing now? It's zero, right? So the frictional force is kind of a smart force. It adjusts itself to be whatever it needs to be, up to some maximum, right? Because I can push this thing if I push fast enough, hard enough on it. So most cases, we're going to have equations. For this frictional force, we're going to have an inequality, that the frictional force is less than or equal to some particular number, which is called the coefficient of friction times the normal force. But that's a chapter ahead. Well, at least a lecture ahead.
So with normal force, if like the table didn't have a high enough threshold for
very normal force pushing back up, then the brick would fall through the table.
So in the absence of the normal force, yeah, that thing would accelerate at G. More questions? Now let's take a look at some more of these iQuiz questions. So here I've got kind of a stack of wood, and I've got the weight of those pieces of wood. And remember, weight is just the force of gravity that's down. The net force on book Y is? Zero, right? Because it's not accelerating, it's just sitting there. Right? So C. The force of book Z on book Y is what? Ah, good, I see some right answers. So it's kind of a fight between A and B. So does Z have to hold up both X and Y, in which case the answer might be 9, or does Z just have to hold up Y, in which case the answer might be 5? Well, if an elephant steps on top of this all, do you think this force between Z and Y has to increase? Yeah, right? If you stuck a pancake in there, it would get flattened by the increased force of the elephant stomping on it all. So we'll see that this force has to support all of that weight. The force of book Y on the table is... I don't think I see any right answers. Zero. They're not in contact, right? What sort of magical force could Y put on the table through the book? Right? So there's no force between Y and the table. So Rupert pulls this box across a horizontal surface at velocity v, pulling with a rope tension T. And we also have the frictional force and the weight and the normal force. Which of the following relationships is true? I'm not fooling many people. So obviously the tension needs to be more than the frictional force in order to move it. Not. Okay. If it's moving at constant velocity, it has zero acceleration. And so the net force needs to be zero. So the tension has to equal the frictional force, and the normal force has to equal the weight. Right? Otherwise, there'd be acceleration. So the net force on your car moving down the freeway at 75 miles an hour is zero, unless you're going around a curve.
So T and F are the same in this case?
Numerically, they're equal but opposite. Only when you're changing the velocity.
Oh.
Yep. If the net force is zero, the velocity will be constant, and vice versa. If the velocity is constant, the net force will be zero.
Okay.
I have one. Okay, how about now? I've been good at fooling people. So the net force still has to be zero, right? But remember that tension is coming in two pieces. There's a horizontal piece and there's a vertical piece. The horizontal piece, that has to equal the friction. But that means that the tension has to be more than the frictional force in total. Right? Because it has another component too. Only a piece of the tension is fighting the frictional force. So the tension as a whole has to be more. And similar things apply in terms of the weight, right? The weight is going down, the normal force is going down, and this is going up. So the normal force combined with the vertical component of the tension will equal the weight. So the normal force by itself is going to be less than the weight. So he's lifting that box a little bit. So the normal force doesn't have to equal the weight. If this were on a scale, the scale would read lighter than the weight because he's pulling up on it a little bit. Yeah, so B. Okay, so how about some numerical problems? So here's kind of the lineup. We'll see how far we get. So in the first problem, I could have left that on. So in the first problem, a football punter is going to kick a football. The football is going to go from at rest before he hit it to 10 meters a second. The contact time is going to be 0.2 seconds, and the football weighs half a kilogram. What's the force that the punter puts on the football? Okay, so we go from zero velocity to 10 meters a second in a time that is 0.2 seconds, and we're supposed to calculate the force. And we said that the acceleration is the force divided by the mass. And you remember from chapter 2, the acceleration is the change in velocity during that change in time. So we have a change in velocity. We're ending up at 10. We started at 0. And this all happened over 0.2 seconds. So we've got, let's check our units. We've got meters per second per second. So this is going to give us the units of acceleration, meters per second squared. And 10 divided by 0.2 is 50. And therefore, the force has to be the mass times the acceleration. So we have half a kilogram times 50 meters per second squared. So that's going to be 25 kilogram meters per second squared. Now we're lazy. We don't like to write kilograms meters per second all the time. So we just invent something that is exactly the same thing as that. We call that a newton. So we say that the force is 25 newtons. Let's skip 9 for a second, and let's switch up here to 12. So here we have forces that are acting on a car, and in a real case there would be a frictional force, but we're supposed to ignore friction and imagine that we have these two forces that are acting on the car, and we're supposed to figure out what the net force is and what the acceleration of the car is. So here we're back to adding vectors. And I'm going to advertise the magic button, but at least I asked people in the last class and the magic button was not making much of an impact. I'll advertise it one more time. So what we've got is that force, which is 450 newtons at 10 degrees. And we've got this force here that is, I think it's 400 newtons at 30 degrees. And we need to vector add those two things. And that means we have to break them up into their x and y components and add up the x and y components, and then we can get the magnitude and angle of the resulting vector. So what I'm of course going to do is use my magic button on the calculator, and it doesn't want angles from vertical. It always wants me to give the angles from the x-axis. So I have to give it 60 degrees for that first angle, and I have to give it 90 plus 10 degrees. I have to give it 100 degrees for that second one. So what we've got then for that first one is 60 degrees and 400 newtons, and I push the magic button and I'm told that this vector is 200 in the x direction and 346 in the y direction. And for this guy here, I might as well put it right here since I'm going to add them. For that one there, I put in 100 degrees and 450 newtons, and I'm told that this is minus 78 and 443. And all I need to do is to add those components, and what I get is 121.9, carrying an extra digit, and 789.6. So that's kind of pointed this way. I can write this as a magnitude and an angle, because my calculator does that thing too at the push of a single button. So I can tell you that that is 798.9 newtons at an angle of 81.2 degrees. I don't know, maybe this is the last time I'll try to sell the magic button. If we do it by hand, all we have to do is use some trigonometry. It's not that much more complicated. So for this vector here, I can break it up into its x and y components. This y component is opposite this 60 degrees, so it's going to be 400 newtons times the sine of 60 degrees. And this x component, it's adjacent to that 60 degrees, so it's going to be 400 newtons times the cosine of 60 degrees. If I take this triangle here, I can recognize that this y component, it's now adjacent to that 10 degrees, so it's going to be 450 times the cosine of 10 degrees. And this x component, it's opposite that 10 degrees, so it's going to be 450 times the sine of 10 degrees. And now by hand, I have to recognize that this is going in the minus x direction. And so I need to put a minus sign in there, basically by hand. Once I've calculated those things out, I should get exactly what I got from my calculator, and I can crank through and get those x and y components. Once I've got those x and y components, I can use Pythagoras, sum of the squares of the square root, to give me that value. And I can take the 789 and the 122 to calculate this angle theta, because the tangent of that angle is equal to the 789 divided by the 122. So the angle is the inverse tangent of that same quantity. Okay, so I don't know, pays your money, takes your choice. Belts and suspenders, I guess I would advertise. You might as well learn how to do it both ways. So once we've got the force, it's pretty easy to calculate the acceleration, right? We're just going to take the force, basically 799 newtons, and divide it by the mass, which is 3 metric tons. So that's 0.266 meters per second squared. Okay. So let's go back to 9. So 9 is kind of a complicated word problem. Takes a while to read through all that's listed there. So this deals with a big fish, basically a 100-pound fish, that's a meter and a half long and is trying to jump its way up the Columbia River. And the statement is that this fish, just with its nose coming out of the water, it's already moving upwards at 3 meters per second. Sometime later, it's 2/3 of the way out of the water, and it's moving even faster, 6 meters per second, because of this finny force. Right? It's moving its fin in order to get a big force that is pushing it upward, so it's accelerating up. And we're supposed to calculate what that force is. So the size of this fish is 1.5 meters, and that's a big fish. And this distance here is supposed to be 2/3 of that, which nicely works out to 1 meter. So the fish has gone from 3 meters a second to 6 meters a second in a distance of 1 meter. What do we do now?
How did you get that 1 meter?
Because the problem says that the fish is 2/3 of the way out of the water. And they tell us that it's 1.5 meters. I mean, they decided to tell us things in complicated ways. What next? Well, looking kind of ahead, we want to get forces, so that means we want to get an acceleration. So do we have enough information to calculate the acceleration that that fish is undergoing? We've got a change in velocity. Say again? We don't have a time. Hold off on thinking about gravity. So gravity is a cause of motion, and right now we're just trying to figure out what the motion was.
Change in distance. I mean, it's, I guess it's delta y, is it delta x? Because you know it's going from 0 meters to 1 meter high.
Mm-hmm. So what do we do with that? So do we have an equation that involves velocity and acceleration and distances? And not time, because we don't know time. Which one?
You need y.
Yeah. So basically, this equation, that was for the special case where the acceleration was minus g. What we have is that v squared is equal to v naught squared plus 2a. Let me call it delta x, because that's what we called it in the last chapter. I can call that direction x if I want to. So I can calculate now what the acceleration is, right? It's going to be v squared minus v naught squared divided by 2 times the displacement. So I've got the 6 squared and the 3 squared and the 2 times 1 meter. Let's spend a second to check units. We've got meters squared per second squared upstairs, and we've got meters downstairs. So we are going to get acceleration in meters per second squared. So we've got 36 minus 9, and then divide that by 2. So we have 13.5 meters per second squared in terms of our acceleration. So now let's think a second about forces. Yes?
How did you get the change in x?
Because they tell us that the fish went up. In a complicated way, they tell us it went up 1 meter. They say it went up 2/3 of its length. And its length is 1.5 meters. And I'm just deciding to call this the x direction, just because it, I hope it's reminding you of the previous case. So we can't literally apply this equation, because this equation is just saying that we're in free fall, that the only force acting is gravity. And we have this Finney force acting too. So the fin is pushing it up. Gravity, the weight, is pushing it down. So the sum of those two forces, the force that we're trying to find minus, because it's going in the opposite direction, the weight, that has to be the mass of this fish, which is 61 kilograms, times this acceleration. Now, the formula for the force of gravity looks a lot like a mass times an acceleration, but it's really a formula for a force. So what we've got then is this force is m times the acceleration plus m times g. The force has to be ma more than the weight in order to be pushing the fish actually faster. So this force is going to be 61 kilograms times 13.5 plus 9.8. So I get 1.42 times 10 to the third newtons. And we can check units. What we've got here are kilogram meter per second squared, and that's exactly the same thing as a newton. Okay, so there are lots of ways of calculating acceleration. In an easy case, it's going to be a delta v divided by a delta t, but we still have all of these equations that we can apply to calculate accelerations. We're not just limited to the first definition of acceleration. Question? Okay. Yes. So, mostly I want to say yes.
Okay.
What you can always say is that the net force, that is to say the vector addition of the forces, is equal to the mass times the acceleration. In this particular case, the force that we were trying to calculate was up and gravity was down, so we had that minus sign, but we were really adding those two forces. Yeah, so we use those terms pretty much interchangeably here. But weight is the force of gravity, and technically speaking, it should be measured in newtons, as opposed to the mass of an object, which would be measured in kilograms. Yeah, so it's a little bit tricky. In English units, we have pound force and we have pound mass, as it were. And we don't make that distinguishing between the force and the mass. But the mass is the thing that would be the same if we were on Mars or the moon or whatever. It's basically how many atoms that you're made out of. Whereas the weight depends on what gravity is at your local location.
Did you include the second mass for the one that was supposed to be multiplied?
Did I say again?
Did you include the second mass for the one that was supposed to be multiplied by gravity?
I'm not hearing you. Yeah, 61 is the mass of the fish. It's a big fish. Okay, let's take a look at this burglar question. So this burglar is hanging, and so there's no acceleration, and so we know that the net force on it is zero, on him is zero. And we're supposed to figure out what the tension is in these, I'll call them strings, but they're probably ropes that are supporting him. So we've got a string that's pulling him this way. Let me call that T2. We've got a string that's pulling him that way. Let me call that T1. And this angle is 37 degrees. And we know that he has a weight of 600 newtons. If we add up all of those forces, we have to get zero because he's not accelerating. He's just sitting there, hanging there, I guess. So what we know is that the sum of the forces in the x direction better be zero, and the sum of the forces in the y direction better be zero. But in order to do much, we have to break up this force into a horizontal force and a vertical force.
It's actually calculating the degrees from the top of it, so when it actually degrees.
So there's a theorem in geometry that alternating interior angles are equal. More questions? Okay, so this vertical force, since it's a side that's opposite the 37 degrees, this one is going to be T1 times the cosine of 37 degrees. And this one here, since it's, this one here, since it's adjacent, is going to be T1 times the cosine of 37 degrees. So these two forces have to add up to zero, which is to say that T2 better have the same magnitude as T1 times the cosine of 37 degrees. And these two things better add up to zero. So T1 times the sine of 37 degrees better add up to the 600 newtons that we need to support. So two equations and two unknowns. In this case, it's pretty easy to solve. If we just divide by the sine of 37, we get 600 newtons divided by the sine of 37. That's equal to T1. And then we can plug T1 in there to get the value for T2. I guess I didn't even calculate those out. Questions? So I don't think we have enough time to do it, but let's at least point a little bit at this number 20. So this is, again, a situation where this guy doesn't want his leg to be accelerating. He wants it to stay with him. So we have to have the sum of these forces being zero. And in this case, we have to figure out two unknowns. We don't know what this angle is, and we don't know what this weight is that's required to keep this cast not flying off the guy's body. And it's the same sort of problem. We're going to have to set the sum of the forces equal to zero, which basically means that the y component of the weight and the y component of this force here have to be equal and opposite, and these two forces here have to be equal and opposite. What's a little bit tricky is how you go about getting this angle alpha. And I'll just say that it's tricky, I guess, and call it quits. Questions?